Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on DPLEX. The content in this episode, which focuses on IP licensing as a strategic business tool, comes from Christine Walmsley-Scott.
Many companies, maybe even yours, spend countless hours, pour incredible resources into creating, you know, groundbreaking intellectual property. Could be a revolutionary invention, maybe an unforgettable brand, but simply owning that IP, honestly, that's often just step one. To really unlock its massive business potential, there's this powerful strategic tool that gets, well, kind of overlooked sometimes. And that's what we're diving into today. The fascinating world of IP licensing. Our guide for this particular deep dive is a really comprehensive summary of a fantastic lecture by Christine Walmsley-Scott. She is a brilliant European patent attorney, an IP expert from Sisvel, and she shared these insights as part of the CIPI University Diploma in IP Business Administration. Our mission, like always, is to pull out the most important nuggets of wisdom for you. Doesn't matter if you're a startup, an SME, or just really curious about how intellectual property actually generates real-world value. We're going to navigate the complexities, the surprising benefits, and yeah, the crucial risks so you can understand this powerful tool with confidence.
Exactly. And we're going to synthesize Walmsley-Scott's detailed exploration, give you a solid framework. This isn't just about, you know, what IP licensing is. It's about why it matters and, crucially, how you approach it strategically. Our goal, help you move from maybe feeling buried in info to being genuinely well-informed pretty quickly.
Okay, let's dive straight in then. Fundamentally, what is IP licensing? What's maybe the biggest thing people get wrong about it?
Yeah, good place to start. So at its core, IP licensing is basically an agreement. The owner of the IP, that's the licensor, they grant very specific limited rights to someone else, the licensee. And these rights let the licensee use or maybe develop or commercialize that IP, usually in exchange for what's called consideration. Often that's royalties, could be other value too. I think the common misconception is just thinking you're renting out your IP. Walmsley-Scott really emphasizes it's much more than that. You got to look at it from two angles. Legally, sure, it's a contract, a precise one, defining rights, terms, all that. But economically, wow, it's a powerful mechanism, like an IP turbo boost. Licensing, honestly, it's like this ultimate efficiency hack. It lets companies skip really costly R&D, bring cutting-edge tech to your market much faster. It doesn't just spread innovation around, it actually sparks more of it, makes technology more accessible, fosters healthy competition, puts more tools in more hands.
Huh. So definitely not just some dry legal document. It's a strategic business driver. Can really shape industries. That sounds, well, pretty appealing. But I guess there are always downsides, right? Especially with valuable assets like IP. Christine really digs into those risks, doesn't she? How this win-win could potentially flip if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm.
So what are those key benefits and dangers for both sides, the owner and the user?
You're absolutely right. It's symbiotic, definitely. But yeah, it needs careful navigation. Okay, for the licensor, the owner, the benefits. They're significant. Imagine reaching totally new markets without having to build huge marketing or distribution networks yourself. Big cost saving. You can test if your IP actually works in a market, maybe even block competitors, and tap into new revenue streams, all while keeping ownership of your core IP.
Okay, that sounds great. But the catch?
The catch. Well, the risks are real. Walmsley-Scott points out your licensee could eventually become a direct competitor, especially in markets where you haven't invested directly yourself. Ouch. And there's always the risk of losing some control over quality, how your IP is actually used.
Right. So how do you protect against that?
Mitigation's key. Walmsley-Scott advises embedding really stringent quality control measures right into the agreement. Diligent checks on licensee compliance. And very, very well-defined termination clauses, ways to get out if things go wrong. For you, the licensor, it's all about being proactive. Protecting your asset, your market position.
Makes sense. Okay, what about the other side? The licensee.
Right, the licensee. The benefits for them are just as compelling. You get instant access to new tech, established reputations that can open up incredible new business opportunities. Think about it. If you're an SME, this lets you compete with bigger players, even without their massive R&D budget.
Yeah, level the playing field a bit.
Exactly. You can offer proven products, test market success without huge upfront investment. But The risks. Well, you could become technologically dependent on the licensor. That leaves you vulnerable if they change direction. Also, the IP you licensed. It might get challenged legally or maybe just become obsolete. Yeah. And you could still be stuck paying royalties for tech that's, well, not useful anymore.
Oof. Yeah, paying for nothing. That's rough.
Definitely. So Walmsley Scott suggests smart strategies here too. Licensees should look into design around options so you're not totally dependent. Negotiate things like suspending royalty payments if the IP's validity gets challenged. And again, secure favorable termination clauses, your own escape hatch.
Those mitigation tactics sound incredibly smart. But Christine, are there times when even the best plans just fail? What's like the one mistake companies still make after trying to cover these bases?
That is a great question. And yeah, honestly, it often boils down to underestimating how important it is to define terms really, really thoroughly. Companies get excited about the deal, right? And they sometimes rush through the details. And then later they find these ambiguities in definitions like licensed product or net sales. And that's where the real arguments start, even if they thought they had precautions in place. It's about being proactively meticulous, every single word.
Meticulous. Got it. Okay, so when we talk IP, most people jump straight to patents. But Christine points out the licensing world is much bigger than that. What other kinds of intellectual property can you actually license out?
Oh, it's a really diverse portfolio. Walmsley Scott highlights several key types way beyond just inventions. First, yes, patents, absolutely. They cover specific formulas, products, methods. Licensing a patent lets the licensee legally make, use, or sell that invention without worrying about infringement. The license spells out the exact scope, what they can and can't do with it.
Okay, standard stuff. What else?
Well, think about design rights. These protect how a product looks like unique packaging, maybe the shape of a phone. Licensing this lets another company copy that specific aesthetic. It's huge in industries like fashion or consumer electronics where looks sell, right?
Interesting. So visual appeal itself is licensable.
Totally. It's often overlooked but can build massive brand value, even if you don't own the core tech. Then there's trade secrets and know-how. This is confidential stuff. Maybe unfiled patent applications, specific manufacturing processes, secret sauce, basically. Licensing these grants access to valuable, unpatented info that gives a competitive edge. But these licenses usually come with really strict confidentiality clauses. Gotta keep the secret secret.
Makes sense. Keep going.
Okay, next, trademarks. Licensing logos, brand names that people already know and trust. This lets a company leverage all that built-up recognition and goodwill. For you, it can be a powerful way to expand into new markets or product lines. The licensee gets to piggyback on a trusted name.
Right, like putting a famous cartoon character on a lunchbox.
Exactly like that. And finally, copyright. Very common for software licensing. Copyright licenses give users the right to use, copy, sometimes modify software, but under specific conditions. Crucial for protecting developers while still letting people actually use the software.
Wow. So yeah, much wider range of assets than just inventions. It's a whole toolbox. And you mentioned the terms can vary wildly, especially around control. How much exclusivity does the licensee get? How does Walmsley Scott break down those different levels? Why is that specific distinction so important?
This is absolutely critical in any negotiation. Getting the exclusivity right is key to aligning the license with your business goals. Walmsley Scott outlines three main types. First, you have non-exclusive licenses. Pretty straightforward. The licensor can grant licenses for the same IP to multiple parties. Lots of people can use it.
It's maximizing reach.
Exactly. Maximizes revenue potential, allows widespread adoption. Good if you want your tech everywhere. Second, there's sole licenses. Now, here, the licensor grants rights to just one licensee, but, and this is key, the licensor keeps the right to use the IP themselves, too.
Ah, okay. So the licensee doesn't have other licensees competing, but the owner can still be in the game.
Precisely. It's a balance. Gives the licensee some exclusivity, but the licensor still has flexibility. And third, exclusive licenses. This is the top tier of exclusivity. The licensor gives up specific rights completely. They cannot grant them to anyone else and often can't even use them themselves within that defined scope. This gives the licensee full control within the agreement. Naturally, these are attractive for really high value or strategic deals, and they usually command higher royalties.
Okay. Non-exclusive, sole exclusive. Got it.
And just one more point on that. Exclusivity isn't just about who can use it. It can also be defined by what rights are exclusive, like maybe an exclusive right to import but not manufacture. Or it can be defined by territory, like an exclusive license just for the European Union, for example.
That territorial part seems huge. So this really raises a big question. How do you figure out which type non-exclusive, sole exclusive is right for your business. Seems like a massive strategic choice. Could really make or break things.
Absolutely. And honestly, it loops back to your strategic goals. What are you actually trying to achieve? Are you aiming for broad adoption, getting revenue from lots of different sources? Or are you looking to build a really deep, committed partnership in one specific area or market? Christine's work really pushes you to define those objectives clearly first before you even start negotiating the type of license.
Define the goal first. Makes total sense.
Hey, are you an IP expert with a focus topic you want to share? Then you might be just the right fit to become an IP subject matter expert at the IP Business Academy. It's a great opportunity to build visibility for your expertise and reach new clients through a trusted academic platform. You'll be supported in creating digital content, LinkedIn strategies, and outreach to your target group. If you're ready to raise your profile and position yourself as a thought leader, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. End of advertisement.
Okay, so getting the type of license right is vital. But Walmsley Scott also hammers home that the actual words in the agreement are just as critical. What's like the absolute most important part of the contract language? And what specific terms need to be defined with laser precision to avoid those future headaches?
You've absolutely nailed it. The language is everything. And Walmsley Scott argues pretty convincingly that the grant clause is probably the single most important part of the whole agreement.
The grant clause.
Yeah. This clause defines the entire scope. Is it exclusive, non-exclusive? What specific rights are granted? Which products exactly are covered? What's the territory? She really stresses you need clear, unambiguous language here. Any vagueness is just asking for trouble later. For you, the takeaway is, if it's not spelled out clearly in the grant clause, you probably don't have the right to do it. Simple as that.
Wow. Okay. High stakes for that one clause.
Yeah.
What else needs that level of clarity?
Well, flowing from that, the definition section is mission critical. Terms used throughout the agreement have to be clearly defined. Otherwise, everyone might interpret them differently. For instance, field of use. This defines the specific application. Is that chemical compound licensed for treating humans or maybe just animals? Getting this wrong can lead to unintended competition or overlap.
Right, need to stay in your lane.
Exactly. Then, licensed IP. This can't just be vague, like the technology. No, it has to clearly list the specific patents, the applications, right down to the registration numbers and countries. And critically, as Walmsley Scott points out, does it include future-related applications like divisionals or continuations? You need to know exactly what IP is covered and enforceable.
Super specific.
Then, licensed product. Does the license cover just one specific item or a broader technology platform that could lead to many products? This impacts future development and royalties. And speaking of royalties, net sales. This definition is absolutely vital. Walmsley Scott warns about using vague terms like turnover or revenue or gross income.
Why is that so dangerous?
Because they can be interpreted in so many ways. Depending on how net sales is defined, what deductions are allowed before calculating the royalty, the licensee could end up paying way more than expected, or the licensor getting way less. Huge potential for conflict.
Ah, I see. Got to define exactly what revenue counts.
Precisely. Then there's the term. How long does the license last? Is it tied to the life of the patent or a fixed number of years? Needs clear start and end dates. And crucially, provisions for what happens after termination. And finally, territory. Where in the world does the license apply? Worldwide. Specific countries. This affects everything. Sales, manufacturing, import rights, royalty calculations.
Okay, listening to all that,
It
really drives home the point. If you're looking at a license agreement, you need to scrutinize every single word in these clauses. They literally define the entire relationship. It's where the rubber meets the road, isn't it?
Couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly it.
Okay. So beyond the scope and the nitty-gritty language, there are two other huge practical things. How you get paid and how you get out if things go south. It almost sounds like planning the exit is just as crucial, maybe even more so, than planning the entry. What does Walmsley Scott say about payment structures and those all-important termination clauses?
Yes, absolutely. Critical practicalities. Deals live and die by these. So on payments, Walmsley Scott explains that the consideration doesn't always have to be cash. It could be a cross-license where you swap IP rights with another company, or it could even be help with commercialization, like marketing support. But she strongly recommends doing a valuation exercise, even an informal one, to figure out what fair royalties should be. For you, that means doing your homework. What's your IP actually worth in this context?
So don't just guess at a number.
Right. And actual payment methods can vary, too. You might get a lump sum up front, or right. periodic fixed fees, or per unit royalties you get paid for each item sold. Or, very commonly, royalties based on a percentage of those carefully defined net sales we just talked about. The method chosen often reflects how much risk each side wants to take, and frankly, how much admin they want to deal with.
Okay, makes sense. And the exit strategy. Termination.
The exit strategy. Termination clauses. Walmsley Scott stresses it is vital to have safe termination rights. Clear ways out. Reasons for termination can be varied. Maybe the underlying IP expires, or one party breaches the agreement. Maybe there's a change of control, like one company gets bought out, or even insolvency.
So, planning for the worst case scenarios.
Essentially, yes. Careful drafting here is crucial to protect both parties' interests when the agreement ends, whether it's planned or unexpected. This is absolutely your safety net. Don't sign without a good one. And just to quickly round out the typical agreement clauses, Walmsley Scott also mentions others you'll usually see. Things like guarantees, warranties, indemnities, basically who's responsible if something goes wrong, clauses about maintaining the IP, who pays for that, obligations to actually try and commercialize, use best efforts, agreements about future IP, sometimes called grant-back clauses, where the licensee might have to license their improvements back to the owner.
Oh, interesting. Keep the innovation flowing back.
Can be, yeah. Plus the usual confidentiality stuff. What happens if a third party infringes the IP? And audit rights, so the licensor can check the licensee's books for royalty calculations. It's a comprehensive package for a reason.
Definitely sounds comprehensive. Okay, one last major area Christine touches on, which feels important for the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
Competition law. How does that mesh with IP licensing, especially since IP itself grants a kind of monopoly?
That's a really insightful question. It's a bit of a balancing act. So while IP does grant specific monopoly rights to the owner, IP licensing itself is generally seen as pro-competitive.
Pro-competitive? How so?
Because it helps spread technology and innovation around the market faster, right? More people get access, which fosters competition. However, there's always a risk. The terms of a license could potentially be structured in a way that actually stifles competition instead of promoting it. Like, carving up markets unfairly, or setting excessively restrictive conditions. Walmsley Scott's advice here is clear. If you have any concerns that a license agreement might have anti-competitive issues, you absolutely need to talk to a competition law expert. Don't guess.
Right. Get specialist advice. So, connecting it all up, it seems the goal is to use IP licensing smartly to drive your business and innovation forward, but without accidentally tripping over competition rules and harming the market itself.
That's a perfect summary. Leveraging IP strategically, but responsibly.
Well, we have covered a lot of ground today, a really fascinating journey through the world of IP licensing, unpacking its definitions, the risks, the benefits, right down to the nitty-gritty of agreement clauses. All thanks to Christine Walmsley Scott's fantastic insights from her lecture.
Yeah, hopefully you now have a much clearer framework for understanding how licensing can be this incredibly powerful strategic tool. For generating revenue, yes, but also expanding markets, fostering collaboration, but always keeping in mind those benefits, those risks, and all the complexities involved. It's not simple, but it is powerful.
So thinking about all this, what does it really mean for you listening right now?
Maybe consider this. Now that you understand this nuanced art of IP licensing a bit better, how might that change how you look at the intellectual assets all around you? Not just seeing them as creations, but maybe as tools. Tools for strategic partnerships, for business growth.
And maybe ask yourself, what new value could you potentially unlock from intellectual property, even IP you don't own directly, just by understanding and maybe leveraging the power of licensing? Lots to think about there. That's it for this deep dive. We really hope you feel a little more well-informed, maybe even inspired, to explore the exciting potential of IP in whatever you do.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.